Hey guys, I'm Adam Rappaport, and this is the Bon Appetit Foodcast. All right, this week we have a very exciting show for you. BA's own Carla Lolly Music just published a cookbook. It came out yesterday. Over the past 2 years, alongside her job here, where she tests recipes and writes words and edits words and comes on this podcast and is a video star and so much more, she was also writing her very own cookbook. I chat with Carla about her approach to the book, what the process was like, and we discuss some of the recipes in there. It's called Where Cooking Begins: Uncomplicated Recipes to Make You a Great Cook. It's beautiful and it's out there now, and you should definitely go pick up a copy and make sure you check in with Carla on her Instagram feed, which is at Lolly Music, LallyMusic, where she'll be announcing some book tour dates. All right, here we go. So, Carla, I know that you wrote a cookbook, but I had no sort of sense of when you were writing this cookbook.
That's good. That means I like somehow pulled off the double life I was living.
It's kind of like you pitch, like, hey, I want to do this book. I'm like, yeah, cool, cool. And then like 2 years later, all of a sudden, like, here are the galleys.
That's pretty much how it worked.
So like when were you doing this?
When it takes about 2 years is what I learned. So from when I sold the proposal, I had...
Well, let's talk proposal. What was the elevator pitch? What did you say to the agents or whomever?
The elevator pitch was basically that I wanted to write a cookbook that was going to make people excited to go food shopping.
As opposed to clothes shopping.
Yeah, exactly. And sort of getting at this idea that shopping could be part of your creative process, because I feel like people, you know, especially sort of slow food people, will say like, well, if you start with great ingredients, you don't even need to do anything to them. And everybody's like, oh yeah, that's totally, but like, I don't even know how to get a good ingredient. So kind of like drilling down on that, actually shopping for food could be part of deciding what you're going to make. And I think you shop like this. Like you do, you're a good, actually very good example of the shop small often and go home to like a pretty well-equipped kitchen.
Yes, I'd like to shop. I like to go to the market and see like, ooh, that looks like a really beautiful pork chop, or that looks like some amazing leeks or whatever is in the produce aisle, or man, that like citrus right now, we're recording this in early March, is just abundant at a good market. I don't though feel, I think where you and I differ, I lack a plan when I shop. I kind of am too one off, like what I'm just going to make that night. And then we've talked about this scenario before, then all of a sudden you're left with like half a head of broccoli or half a bunch of cilantro and parsley. And then a week and a half later, you're like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. And it's limp in the back of your crisper drawer and it's just depressing.
Yeah. One thing I realized sort of through doing the recipes and then talking about the recipes in the book since then is like, sometimes you go shopping in your fridge.
Hello there.
Well, I think for, you know, the idea that like you could stop somewhere on the way home and be like, I know I'm going to eat dinner tonight.
Is this like after a few CBD mints or something?
No.
Like, baby, let's go shopping in the fridge.
No, I mean in a real way that sometimes I'm like, all right, what are we working with here? There's actually recipes in the book that I made because I was like, I'm hungry. I have not shopped. And I'm going to go shopping in the fridge. And then I sometimes just take a bunch of stuff out at like mystery basket and then put things back as I go that I'm like, actually not going to go in that direction. There's a stir fry with cabbage and bacon and peanuts that I made one day because I was hungry and I was too lazy to go shop.
Do you throw any like rice vinegar and stuff or something?
Yeah, I did.
Perk and it up.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say the king of my fridge shopping meal, the king meal, I don't even know what I'm talking about. Sorry. I've only had one coffee this morning. Pasta carbonara.
Sure.
Because you pretty much always have eggs. I always have a hunk of Parmesan, and sometimes I have bacon. And if you know how to make carbonara well, and you've done recipes, you've written about it extensively in BA, it's one of those dishes you're like, God, this is so good.
Yeah, and that's a smart one too, because expanding the idea of what a well-stocked pantry means. Mm. Like pantry to me also includes...
I wish I had a pantry. I don't have a pantry. Growing up, I remember it was like a little closet you walked into with shelves and stuff on
my
it.
My mom
that you
has
could
like
see.
A room that you go into. It's incredible.
So good.
But thinking of pantry as as not just dry goods, but like pantry should, like you said, include cheese and eggs.
Cold pantry.
Yeah. And bacon. Like those can be part of what you think of as your pantry, like your staples or your, I call them in the book, the functional items, like the things
that. Pretty sexy term. Did you call it that yourself?
I did. Well, see, it's supposed to sound kind of not sexy, actually. Oh.
There's utilitarian.
Like the fun shopping, which is like your farmer's market or
steelhead
your,
salmon, that sort of stuff.
Steelhead.
I don't know what steelhead is. That a thing? Isn't that a thing? Steelhead salmon?
I think it's seasonal. So you're like excited because.
Well, when you see like the wild salmon, you're like, oh my God, it's so orange. I can't believe that. I'm going to buy it for $34 a pound.
Exactly.
Screw it.
And then you go, that's your fun shopping, right? Your steelhead salmon's running again.
Never bought salmon in my life.
Really?
I'm not a salmon guy.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Sometimes I really crave it, but sometimes I don't crave it till I see it, like what you just described.
Well, there's certain markets you go to and you're like, God, that salmon just looks so sad. It's like that kind of opaque and it looks a little bit mushy almost. Yep. And it's just sitting there and you're like, ugh.
Nope.
And then sometimes you see it and it's pristine and glistening and you're like, wow.
Right. And sometimes... this is, you know, another thing. People choose the recipe before they go shopping. So they might be like, oh, hey, honey, we're having salmon tonight. And then they're like,
slamming salmon.
And then they're like, I'm having salmon. I decided on salmon. I told my housemate we're having salmon. Yeah. Now I'm going to go get the salmon. And they go to the store. And like you said, the salmon just looks like, ooh, it kind of looks like the filet got torn up a little bit or somebody clawed it.
You don't want toe up.
And then you're like, what? Now what do I do? Because what do you do in that instance?
Because like, all right, so that's a great question. We talk about, especially at fish markets and at times with meat. Also, it's like buy what looks best, but there are certain recipes that work with certain types of fish or certain types of meat. And if they don't have salmon, like subbing in like a flaky cod or something is not the same experience. So like, let's say the salmon doesn't look good. What are you looking and what, give me a salmon recipe in your mind that you might be thinking of making. And then you go to the market and the salmon doesn't look good. So
yeah,
walk me through that.
You know, you could be craving salmon. So you want to, you know, think one easy sort of way of thinking about it is like people love salmon because the skin gets crispy and they're, the flesh is kind of rich and fatty, but it's not like too fishy.
No, it's not like mackerel. It's like good fatty.
Good fatty and it's rich. And you're like, oh, I want that crispy skin and I want it to be like just slightly pink in the middle. And then you go to the thing and it's like, oh, the salmon actually doesn't look great. Mm-hmm. Now what do I do? So you can, what I want people to do is think, okay, well, am I after the like crunchy skin fatty experience or do I really want fish? And honestly, to me, like you could pivot to a recipe that is for a chicken thigh at that point because a lot of those same things will work.
Wow.
A lot of those flavors will work. There's a recipe in the book for a crispy skinned salmon that has like a tartar sauce that you make out of shaved cauliflower. And it's got like a lot of citrus in it. And it's a little bit fatty, like somewhere between, like tartar remoulade with cauliflower in it and lots of chives. That would be great with cauliflower, citrus. Like, that'd be great with chicken. It would probably work with a pork chop, too. But if you wanted to stay in the fish family, I would then at that point talk to the fish guy and be like, I want a fish where the skin will get crisp, but I can cook the whole thing in a pan.
Yeah. Like, with salmon, for instance, like if you want to do a sort of an Asian-y glaze treatment kind of in that miso cod family, like, that sort of thing could probably work. And the reason in black cod is sable fish, correct?
Right.
But that... it's kind of similar to salmon in that it's rich and fatty
totally.
And its skin can get crispy and it kind of slips apart. So you kind of want fish with similar qualities. And I think with any shopping experience, if you can go to a place where the people working there know what they're talking about,
right,
that makes a huge difference. So
yes.
You can tell the counter person, hey, I want to make this. What, you know, what can I sub?
I always find when I ask like a very specific question of like the meat counter or the fish counter person, you kind of ask one or two questions and then if they're worth their salt, which is an expression I like, if they're worth their salt, they'll just say, what do you miss? What are you planning to make with it?
Yeah.
You know, because like that's how they're thinking, like, don't ask me all these weird questions about whether I have a bone in,
exactly.
skin on
the other
thing.
Are we braising? Are we
like,
grilling?
What are you trying to do?
Hey, we don't have good shrimp, but if you're grilling, you can get some, we got really beautiful scallops right now. You can throw those on the grill with some skewers. And
exactly.
Boom.
And they're like, quick cooking, long cooking.
Okay, so you had this idea where cooking begins, the shopping process. You pitch this to whom? Who do you go
well,
to?
Well, first.
Because I've never written anything longer than 400 words ever.
All right, so career coaching on how to write a cookbook. The first thing really you need to like get an agent who will take you on. So I had a, at the beginning, I did not have a good specific hook at all. I was like, you know, I just want to write like a
good
cookbook
food.
That's like the food that I like making. Like I like to cook. And I met with a couple of people. They're like, yeah, that's great. Like you need a hook, you know? And then I ended up working with this agent named Catherine Coles, who was like incredible and very, really thought about it like an editor. Mm. So she, we did a lot of work on the proposal where she was like, that's great. You're great. I'm sure it'll be great. But like, if you're going to sell something, you need a hook. And so that through months of kind of back and forth got down to there's something about how I approach cooking at home that's very much about like how I hunt and gather for what I want to make. And some of it is this like fun romantic idea of going to the farmer's market or going to a great market or having like a great butcher who I like
and
love
you,
to
and
go
you write
to.
About that in the beginning on a beautiful sunny June day where it's warm but not too hot and you've got all morning and you don't have to worry about the kids and your husband's off doing something.
Yeah.
Which obviously that happens once every 12 months. Realistically, you've got like, oh, I got to get there, back, boom, I got to do this.
Totally. And I knew that there was an idea in there about that hunting and gathering as a as part of this creative process was like something. And then sort of through writing the proposal, all of these other moments in my cooking life started to like reveal themselves. So one of the big things that kind of changed the way I shot, because I used to be a very big batch when the kids were younger, I was like all about the spending all weekend, big batch cooking for them, food for the week. And then you'd have this like packed full refrigerator. But I felt like it was like I was providing by doing that.
And you had worked in restaurants when you were younger, management, you understood how a kitchen ran. So you wanted things orderly and on like a system almost.
But then it was like, oh my God, I cook for like 6 hours a day, Saturday and Sunday, so that I don't have to cook during the week. But it actually wasn't very enjoyable. And then just weird things like we had to get a smaller refrigerator at one point. Our refrigerator stopped working. And then the right refrigerator for the space was actually smaller. And that was really when I started cooking differently because I couldn't buy as much stuff at a time. Like I couldn't go to the big supermarket run on the weekend and buy like, the you know, where you're like, the shopping cart's full. So I'm going to go get online now because I'm like, literally, that's as much as I can get home. And then putting it all away. And I just couldn't do it anymore because it wouldn't fit. So then I started shopping smaller. And sort of through the process of writing the proposal, I was like, oh, wait, this is like a real thing that has been a real evolution in like how I approach my cooking at home. So then I wrote the proposal and then she takes it out to market. This little piggy went out to market and then publishers. Yep. And then publishers read it and want to ask questions. And then you get a book deal.
And then you're like, OK, the clock's ticking. Now start writing.
Oh, yeah. Then you have a due date.
And so how many recipes in the book?
70.
70.
Plus there's 7 techniques that each have 12 different ideas of how to apply that technique.
Steaming, roasting, that sort of thing, confiting.
Yep, exactly.
And those lead up to the recipe section.
Yeah.
So what was harder, developing the recipes or writing the text?
The writing. Oh my
Why?
God. Because working on the recipes was, it was really all taken from recipes that were very familiar to me and that I already kind of had and were things that I make all the time because your home cooking does get, you know, you have your tricks and you like, you do them. And so just sort of like going through my memory of the dishes that I love to eat, that part was pretty easy. Developing the recipes, like I cook anyway, so just taking notes on them. But that's like a, you know, it's a skill that I've learned here. So I was like pretty on top of that. Producing the shoots was, we shot over 3 long weekends. So that might have been why you didn't really notice that I wasn't here because it was like Friday to a Monday. And that process was like great, worked with amazing people and like it was really creatively fun and like doing it and it was like coming to life. And then writing, it was just, and I thought, you know, I do this for a living. I was like, I write recipes
literally
all the time, like writing head notes. I've written the head notes of BA for
how hard
six
can that
years.
Be?
I was like, I'm gonna bang it out, sit down, bang it out. And it was just like, oh my God, I might die doing this. So people would go home when I was in the middle of, you know, the process of like having to turn in the manuscript. So like people would go home at night here and I'd be like, good night. Goodbye, everyone.
Oh, so you stayed at work and did it in the office. I was one of those guys.
Well, I'm not.
I was like, bye.
Yeah, bye. So people would leave. And there were nights when I knew I was going to be here for a long time. I like literally had a change of clothes. Would have
the worst thing about this building, they turn off the air.
They turn the air off.
Like
it's rough.
And it's not like freezing, but it's just stuffy.
Yeah. And at least here I had like my stand-up desk and I had my books
that
I needed.
You and your stand-up desk.
And then a lot of it was weekends. Like my, you know, that was another thing you learn when you're like doing a project like this, having a partner who would be like, sure, do you need me to disappear for 7 hours? Is that what you're asking me to do right now?
That's what
like,
that, husbands are great at that.
I was like, goodbye.
All right, let's talk about some specific recipes.
Okay.
Because on the book cover, Where Cooking Begins, Uncomplicated Recipes to Make You a Great Cook, beautiful sort of seared buttery scallops on the cover. And the recipes look and feel like things that a seasoned home cook would make, but they definitely lean very home cook, not restaurant cooking. I can make that. I'm looking at rack roasted chicken with gravy potatoes, and there's this photo of this beautiful crispy bronze bird just sitting right on the rack, oven rack, and below it is a big cast iron skillet of little like sort of baby new potatoes catching all the drippings, and I'm like, why have I not done this before?
Yeah, this was, it's funny that you said it doesn't look like a restaurant technique. This is a thing. The first time I saw it was when we did that story with Daidue.
Oh, down in Texas.
And I was like, oh, that's genius. Because when I worked in restaurants, you would roast chickens on just on like a rack set into a rim baking sheet. And it's for air circulation. But really the baking sheet's not that deep.
Or you're saying a little cooling rack set into the because otherwise when you put the chicken just on like a sheet tray or whatever, then the bottom gets all kind of soggy.
It's my least favorite thing. So this really solves that, where you put the chicken directly on your rack, which is very heat conductive and has the wide slats so air can get all around and you don't get any of the like soggy bottom. But you don't want all those juices also hitting the bottom of your oven and causing a grease smoky situation. So putting the rack of potatoes, the pan of potatoes directly underneath.
And wait, I'm going to stop you.
Okay.
Let's say you're at the market and get inspired. Like, oh my God, those parsnips look amazing. Or those multicolored carrots look amazing. You can just throw those in the pan,
so
right?
So let me guide your eye
look at this. There's a sidebar.
I wonder if it actually, So
spin
in every recipe, I kind of break it out. There's the ingredients, like normal ingredients, but then there's also at the top of the page, just trying to,
I'm going to read this. So it says, from the market, chicken waxy potatoes. Spin it. Replace the potatoes with whole peeled shallots. Ooh, I'd love that because I get all caramelly. Trimmed leeks. Love that. Get nice and sweet. Scrubbed carrots. You got to scrub. Come on. Do you have to say scrubbed carrots?
I mean.
No. halved parsnips. Look at that. It's right there.
There you go.
I love parsnips. 2-inch wedges of winter squash. What qualifies as winter squash?
Any of the hard ones like kabocha, butternut, acorn. Those ones.
Or once again, scrubbed beets. I'm not a beef.
I like a beet.
No one really likes beets. Your son on this podcast lied about loving beets. I was like,
it was the first thing that came into his head.
Oh, this is an interesting one. Halved firm apples such as Pink Lady.
Sure.
I never would have thought about that. I guess you put like pork roast
and
stuff.
Pork and apples are like a nice.
Emma,
yeah.
Would you ever do that? Maybe. She's like, maybe.
I feel like if you combine the shallot and the apple, that could be really nice together.
I do
or
like
the leeks
I do
and
like
the apples.
A lot of times I'll throw apple in when I'm making cabbage. I'll slice up apples with the onions and cabbage. Oh, so that sounds great. And then you have another spin it in terms of seasoning, like smoked paprika, Aleppo pepper, ground cumin, etc., to season the bird.
And that's because I really wanted people to do the thing of like, you could actually choose this recipe before you go shopping, but still have enough flexibility built in so that if you're looking for waxy potatoes and they're like, whatever, fresh out of waxed potatoes, sorry, lady, and you're like, crap, now what do I do? There's sort of this built-in understanding of like, which way you could go.
My old thing with cooking, and I used to do a column in GQ magazine, called The Technique, and that it's with most recipes, it's the technique that matters.
Right.
And this cool rack roasted technique here is the fact is you're doing a bird on a rack, whether there's parsnips or potatoes or apples in the pan, that's catching the fat, it's cooking in there, the air is circulating around the bird. Oh, random question. Are you a convection oven fan?
I do. I mean, I have one on my oven, and so
I never know when to use it or when I shouldn't
use it. This is a good time to use it, actually.
So it circulates all about.
Yeah. It can be too much on like delicate things. You would never use it if you were, say, making like like quiche or something.
Yeah.
You don't want that like hot air blowing all around.
Oh, interesting.
But
This looks absolutely delicious. Spaghetti with quick braised artichokes.
I'm stunned and pleased to hear you say this because of how many fights we've had about artichokes actually over the years.
Well, here's my thing. I would love to come to your house and eat this pasta because I've never bought an artichoke.
Really?
Like a whole artichoke. It's just like there's that the thorny part in the middle and right. What the heart is. I don't even understand what the heart
so
is.
So most of
how
this...
you get the heart, how you clean the things, like what you can eat and can't eat. They're so complicated and intimidating. It's like, why would you ever deal with it?
Most of this recipe is explaining how you trim the artichoke. Well,
exactly.
Right?
It's like,
but
that's
look,
like,
just
it's,
read
it's,
that
it's like
sentence.
It's a wall of text.
Just read that.
This takes way longer to describe than it does to do in real life. Oh, okay. Oh, so you're
so
saying
you
it's not that
it.
Hard.
It's not that bad.
You know
and
what
you
I
only
would
need like?
Like
two artichokes.
You're like a YouTube star these days, right?
Well, yeah. You know.
So have we ever done a YouTube video on the Bon Appetit? .com. No, it's on the Bon Appetit YouTube channel, whatever.
With artichokes?
Yeah.
We should. I actually just pitched it, and it didn't get a sign this time, but I think it will come back around. I want to do it for a back-to-back chef. I think that would be...
Oh, that would be funny.
Right?
Yeah.
Because for someone who had never bought or trimmed an artichoke...
They're intimidating.
Yeah, and you have to talk through, like...
Explain what the different parts are.
What's the stem, and then there's thorns. Like, yeah. You might get stabbed. It
you could
be
die.
It's a thistle.
You don't want to kill Natalie Portman or something, your celeb of the moment on these videos. I love this one. See, all right, so I feel like... You've got the artichokes, you have the spaghetti with olio and parsley, and then you have like a recipe like chicken cutlets with spicy coconut dressing. This strikes me as like such a recipe developer recipe. I would eat the hell out of this thing. There's like little crispy cutlets and a bed of lettuce, but it feels very like clever.
It's not clever. It's just drawing on the same thing that is always good, which is that fatty, crunchy things go really well with cool and crisp things. So it was just another way of thinking about like a veal cutlet, you know, with the arugula and tomato salad on top. It's just the same.
Riffing on that. Again, riffing on spin it. You're spinning it.
I spin it.
When did you start cooking more regularly with like coconut milk or coconut cream? And what's your advice for people getting into it?
You know, I was really lucky because I worked for chefs who had that stuff in their kitchen. So I probably like was exposed to it in the context of like, you know, learning a restaurant recipe. When I started, I don't know. I've always enjoyed a good coconut curry. So, and I just feel like it's a good weeknight thing. Like if you have a good brand of curry paste. So probably when I was first in my first couple apartments, like, oh, you can just like buy curry paste in a jar and buy a can of coconut milk and make like a noodle soup. You know, like if you really
can't
cook
anything. It's kind
of incredible.
So weirdly, and this is just by happenstance, I made a coconut curry last week because Simone bought this cookbook. Like it's like a good health like cookbook by a doctor. It's so sad and depressing. There's like a peeled orange on the cover.
Oh boy. Is it like macronutrients?
It's something, and I was making fun of it. And she's like, well, your friend Gwyneth is a big fan of this doctor. And so I'm like, okay.
Okay.
Whatever. Anyways, and I was texting the picture to Emil, and we were making fun of it and laughing about this cookbook that I had to cook from. But then the made this vegetable curry, which was delicious. A couple cans of coconut milk, some curry powder in there. And then you had some potatoes, some carrots, this and that. And then we made it last week. And I wasn't that hungry that night. And it was good. But then we reheated it last night. We had a couple friends over. It was in the freezer. And it's that thing where it just gets that much better the second time around because the potatoes and all the veg in there really absorbed it, the coconut milk and the curry powder. And then we sort of – this is what I also like doing. I imagine you like doing this too, is like sometimes you can sort of freshen up a braised dish like with a braise when you throw on a little what's the one we call it with the parsley and the garlic and the lemon peel?
Gremolata.
Uh-huh. Maybe some chopped nuts or whatever. And this one we threw in some kale and some sliced up yellow pepper and sort of mixed that in and cooked that down. Made a little sort of basmati pilaf deal. And God, it was good.
Sounds really
so
good.
I mean, apologies to the good doctor.
That recipe for the little chicken cutlets with that iceberg salad, I actually just used the fat from the top of the coconut milk. So it's like...
Oh, so yeah, because when you buy coconut milk, it's separated. Yeah. There's like the dense fat on top.
Yeah, you can buy the coconut cream that... is a thing that exists, but you can also just buy a can of coconut milk and not shake it up and then use that actually as the fat instead of olive oil in the dressing. It just has that coconut solids.
Do you have a notion of what recipes in this book might like take off?
No, it's really funny because when I was working on the book, I kept having that thought like, well, but what's the one that's going to be like the one, and what's the one that's going to be the cookies or like the whatever, the like one that everybody makes. And I really, you could really get yourself into a bad place if you
the chicken Marbella, if you will,
if you like plan to try to do that. And I feel like the times that we have tried or thought we knew it, Bon Appetit, like which one was going to be the one, and we're like,
it's
this is going to be the one, and you're never right, and it's always some other one that like hits a nerve for whatever reason, because the photograph is amazing or because I don't, you know, it's like that cranberry curd pie that we did for Thanksgiving that has the little sugared cranberries on top.
Because you know what? You know, when you say cranberry curd, I do not get hungry.
I know. But that was like for a couple of years, that was like our top. And then you're just like, well, you can't. I just said to myself.
Well, that's kind of what's interesting.
You can't plan.
No.
You can't plan it.
And I think what's neat in this sort of social media age that we live in, and you are active on your Instagram account. What's your handle again?
Lolly Music.
Lally Music.
I mean, if people don't know that. Jeez.
Anyways, but Carla's active on it, and she's interacts with her fans and cooks out there and whatnot. But it's what's cool about the notion of what recipe does gain traction is that it's ultimately up to the cooks, the home cooks, and they're the ones who decide what the recipe is they love to make and why. And then you're like, oh, and then once you sort of get it, then you sort of interact with them.
Yeah, I just felt like I had to make food that was not, there were recipes that I started developing and I was like, I don't even like this. You know what I mean? Yeah. There were a couple things that I thought sounded good or would be fun to make. And then I started developing them and was like, wouldn't make it, wouldn't eat it, don't care about it. And I cut them because I just felt like.
Yeah, 70 made the book. Yeah. How many did you develop?
The original list was like somewhere between 80 and 90. I think around 85 on my original table of contents. And it's kind of as part of it was like for time, I just couldn't develop all of those or realizing like, oh, that one's really similar to this other one that I like a lot. And then there was one like it was a carrot. It was going to be like a pan roasted carrot thing that I had like such a vision for. And I made it three times and I was like, actually, I hate carrots and I never make this. So I cut it. So I just tried to do food that like the recipe works. It's something that I thought tasted great and that simplicity, like sort of falling into some of the rules that I had made for myself in the development of the book, like not making you buy 17 different spices for one, you know, just keeping it as down to earth as I could.
Like you don't really need bay leaves, for instance.
I think bay leaves are they're on my essential.
You have like they're the first thing on your essential.
Because well, a bee, no.
Yeah, they're the least essential thing.
It's alphabetical.
If you make a great braise and don't put in bay leaves, the braise is still gonna be really
tasty.
Didn't
we prove this to be false on bonappetit.com? Like Alex Delaney made bay leaf infused water and everybody tasted it.
Oh God, Delaney. Did you have during this process, did you have a sort of a recipe consigliere who you would turn to? Like, is this good? Like, what does it need? Like,
you know who was my person?
I don't because I'm asking.
My son, Leo, was the he was the most honest
He's not like your other son, Cosmo, who lies.
Cosmo's like, I don't care for green things, but it looks great, Mom. No, Leo eats everything. And he would taste it and he has a great way of giving feedback. And he gave me the best, most honest.
Wow.
Yeah. He was a great little taster. He was really, really good.
What about your husband?
Fernando is, you know, predisposed to like everything
He's
I make.
Like, oh, thank you. This is great. This is great, honey.
He's a little bit more like, oh, yeah, like it. You know, where Leo would just, I don't know, he's a little bit more picky, a party.
Yeah.
Critically, you know, it's good to have a critical thinker.
Okay, so you have critical son, likes everything husband, but you also have a sister who's involved in the food world and is on shoots a lot, and I imagine would have a more sort of professional perspective on a dish. What was her input?
She did all the props for the book.
Okay.
Yeah. I think she knew a lot of the dishes because they were things that I made.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. There were some things that are definitely from our family life together that resonated. So certain ingredients, like that braised artichoke pasta I think I've made for her. The pasta fagioli is based on my mom's recipe. She's been at my house for so many like entertaining, shreddy, big hunk of pork kind of moments. She was really, really helpful to me in what we wanted the pictures to look like, because both of us have been, you know, she works for she's retired from prop styling now, but she'd been on like every great food shoot in the past 7 years. Like the whole time that I had been in BA, she was prop styling. And so we'd seen a lot of food photography, and both of us wanted to figure out like how to make it feel different or more personal. Or so we went to like prop houses together and just kind of like had fun with being whimsical and not having like a very clear idea of like, we're going for marine Seattle late summer, like,
which we do at BA because you want a story to be focused, you want to get where it's coming from. And Michelle Outland, our current creative director, I remember that April issue, which we did, and you wrote the feature well on sort of how we cook now, and she was like, Italy meets the Southwest.
Exactly.
Right, what? Yeah, so think Tuscany by way of Taos. And you're like, oh, okay, I get
it. You're like soft light terracotta, but with a palm leaf shadow.
Exactly.
Like, all right, I'm oriented now.
Very particular.
Now. Yeah, Nina and I were like 70s Sophia Loren plus like whatever whimsical weird thing. So that we had a Pinterest board that we would just like add like weird like mustard yellow old
this is awesome. I don't know why, but it's awesome.
And then kind of came up with a color palette and went from there. So yeah, like that purple plate, for example, was very like, you know, and Nina was like, ooh, I've never gotten to use this on a shoot because no one will ever let me.
It feels very it's like your kitchen growing up in California,
right?
Like in the late 70s.
Yes. And we had a lot of those personal memories of Hellerware and stuff like that.
Your father, Frank Lally, longtime editor in the business, did he have any input or thoughts on the book, or did you not ask him?
I did, and the one thing that he said over and over was, Carla, on the cover, your name can't be big enough.
That's
true. And I was just like, okay. He would be like, listen to me now. Like, he just kept, your name can't be big. And it's pretty big. So when
it's the same point size as the title.
So when he saw it, he was like, name looks good. Like, cool, Dad.
That's funny, because when you think about it, when you get to those sort of bestseller author sort of books, it's the name of the author, especially for like these like thriller novels and stuff that are ginormous. And then the title's like tiny underneath.
Totally.
Yeah. All right. So the book is officially out. Everything I always hear from people who have done cookbooks is that it's on the author to really make the promotion happen, the book tour, all that sort of stuff. So what's the next step?
I have an event tonight at Books for Magic.
Oh, nice.
In Brooklyn. And then there's some stuff going to be happening around in New York. It's nice to be here in such a big market so I can have events happening like over the rest of the month. And then
also, it's such a big city. A lot of media and all that stuff here. But you can have an event on the Upper West Side and get one audience compared to, in Brooklyn, a totally different audience.
Completely.
Compared to, you know, somewhere downtown or whatever. Yeah, you can really
and
hit
it's,
a few
it's
spots.
Also different than, like, when the magazine comes out, and it's really, people are talking about it for about 3 weeks. Like, with a book, you can, it'll have a little life into the spring now and hopefully longer. And then in April, I'm going to go to L.A. and San Francisco for what is for now on referred to as Lollapalooza. That's going to be I'll have tour dates in San Francisco and LA.
Did you put a vacation form in for that?
I did, actually.
Right. Okay.
You've been notified.
Yeah. Do you try to sync up with any sort of festivals or panel things, you know, conferences, that sort of stuff?
No, not really. It's hard.
Yeah, because you actually do have a full-time job.
But
and two kids that we've heard about, and a husband and all that.
I mean, we were in Austin last weekend, right?
Yes.
And it was right before the book came out, but it was, like, fun to be there for South By. But I wouldn't have, you know, like, moved the pub date to be able to promote it. It just is what it is. It'll fall in where it falls in.
All right, two questions before we go.
Okay.
Con and pro.
Okay, this is like lightning round. We haven't done these in a while.
What's the one thing in the book you wish you could have done differently or better now that you look at it?
Oh, man. Well, this is very like an egotistical thing. Somehow through...
Make your name bigger?
Yeah. No, I'm happy with the name. I somehow we shot all of those technique shots of all those seven different techniques. And it's me in all the images. somehow we went through the entire shoot and I don't have one picture of me cooking where you see my face.
Mm.
So there's, yeah, images.
Your friend Gwyneth Paltrow would have told you how important
you
got to
do that. Yeah. So it's like collarbone to belt.
Yeah.
You know, and that looking back now, I'm starting to do some press and people are like, oh, could we get a picture of you like in the kitchen? I'm like, yeah, they all cut off at my collarbone. So that's kind of a regret. I don't know how we didn't make that happen.
I think that's a great point. I don't know if that's on you, but perhaps that should have been on someone in the cookbook world who should have pointed out, like, hey, we definitely want to get some of the shots.
Meanwhile, Cosmo, he has a recipe for his pancakes, and like Cosmo. He's in this like beautiful light.
That kid. We need to have him back on the pod. What are you, when you look at the book now and it came in, what are you most stoked about? You're like, oh my God, this like came out even better than I thought it would. Like, what elements of it?
I think the way that the technique pages look was exactly how I had hoped. It was not exactly. It was better than I imagined them. Part of it
there's
is
this,
that
this photo, I love this steam photo where there's these beautiful multicolored carrots in a bamboo basket and the wisp of steam is coming up and you see presumably your hand.
Yep. And that was our joke on set. Marty Hires was every time while we were shooting the steam section, he kept saying, man, it's like shooting steam in the sunlight.
And it's what I love about these shots. And we've talked about this before in the magazine. This is a beautiful natural light streaming in to the kitchen, presumably. And you've got a shot of the oil drizzling on there.
Yeah.
And in the past, we've done some technique shots in BA, and they've gone much more in that old school time life, very clinical, overhead, white. And I'm always like, that's really the opposite of what cooking is. Like, cooking is in a natural space. It is an environment, you know, and
It is a little messy. Yeah. It is real people's hands. And
there's
that
stuff
was
in the
something,
background. There's a little clutter, which I
feel
really
like
about
whenever
these
you
shots.
Do technique shots in editorial, you like go to the hospital room is what I always do. Yes. You know, it's like some white environment.
I don't want to go
or,
to the hospital.
Yeah. So then this was something that the designers came up with, this idea that there would be a different paper stock for the design for the technique section.
Oh, yeah. Because so like, when you uncoated paper. Yeah, this is uncoated. And then when you get to the recipe section, which is, I'm going to tell you what page number it's on. You want to guess?
I don't know. No. It'll be by signature, 48 or something?
Part three, the recipes. Of course, if there were page numbers, 84 is the first recipe. But there's a lot of actionable information and images before 84. I would not say it's like a densely texted book
you
that's going to
you have a lot
you.
Of payoff in this technique section. The goal was to just show a technique and how you could adapt it to whatever ingredient looked good to you when you went shopping or whatever ingredient looked good to you when you went shopping in your refrigerator.
All right, Carla, music. I imagine our listeners can like buy this book on Amazon or something.
Yeah, sure. And like now you can, I think I had to ask my publisher, I was like, so on the day that it's the pub date, does that mean that like when you go in a store, it'll be there? And they were like, Yep, that's what that means.
All right, Where Cooking Begins, Uncomplicated Recipes to Make You a Great Cook by Carla Lolly Music in really big type.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Carla.
The Bon Appetit Foodcast is produced by Carrie Polis and Christina Che and produced and edited by Emma Wortsman. Our theme music is by Nathaniel Wortsman. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.